The book of Genesis, and in chapter 37, for a fast reading. The book of Genesis and chapter 37. a very well known chapter, and we'll read in and around verse 28. Then there passed by Midianites merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold him, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. And Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes, and he returned unto his brethren, and said, The child is not, and I, whither shall I go? And they took Joseph's coat, and killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the coat in the blood, and they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father. Now, the book of Exodus, please, and chapter 1. The book of Exodus, and in chapter 1. Just breaking in upon the experience of the children of Israel down in the land of Egypt, just to give us a clear understanding that here is another slave. Verse 11, Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Rameses, but the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. Would you kindly turn now, please, to the book of Daniel and chapter 1. The book of Daniel and in chapter 1. The book of Daniel and chapter 1. And we'll read from verse 3. And the king spake unto Aspenas, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they may teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat, and the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah Shadrach, and to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melchizedek, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, And Azariah, prove thy servants. I beseech thee 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these 4 children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. I want to read one more portion, and I hope you're not wearying. In the book of Esther, please, and in chapter 2. In the book of Esther, and in chapter 2. The book of Esther, and chapter 2. And reading from verse 5. The book of Esther, and chapter 2, and verse 5. Now in Shushan the palace there was a certain Jew, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So it came to pass, when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan the palace, to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also unto the king's house, to the custody of Haggai, the keeper of the women. May the Lord bless the reading of his precious word to all our souls. I would like this evening, by the help of the Lord and by the help of his gracious Holy Spirit, to come to you this afternoon and try to arrest you and awaken you and encourage you, and to see from these 4 distinct passages of Scripture how that these slaves, for each of them were but slaves. I know all their connection, and I know their background, and I know all their histories, but really, basically, fundamentally, they were all slaves in a foreign land, and they were not at all breathing in the air of their nativity. They were all strangers, foreigners, slaves. They were all aliens. And not in our wildest imaginations or dreams could we ever believe that they would come to such a pinnacle of fame and come to such a point of usefulness in the things and service of God. And it's only to that end that I'm preaching this afternoon. Because being here for so many days, I become an observer. I don't become a critic, but I become an observer that there might be some people who think that their day of service and the way they are cut out and the circumstances that fall to them, that they never could be used in the economy and purpose of God. You know, my friend, I believe that it gives God immeasurable pleasure just to love, lift the weak and the poor, and to make something in his divine grace of them. You would never have chosen those 12 from Galilee with their guttural language, no education. The Judean people snipped at them, and they called them ignorant and unlearned fishermen. But before it's all finished, my friend, we know what we have in our hand today. John wrote a gospel. He wrote 3 epistles. He wrote the Apocalypse. And what was he? He was only a fisherman from Galilee. He wrote with his brother James and would have been working there still had grace not have reached them and saved them and changed them and God to have taught him. And had he not used the breast of Christ to lean on, he would just have been as ordinary as you and me. You know, the breast of Christ was open to every man, but John utilized it. No one had the monopoly of Christ's breast, but John saw the advantage, and he took it, and he leaned there. And you'll notice the bent of that man's ministry all stems from his leaning on the bosom of Christ. There's something about it. And why am I preaching this to you? Apart from Paul and the mighty Apollos, born in Alexandria, but a Jew, the rest of the servants of God would possibly never have got over A level or anything like that at all in schooling. And God used them in a mighty way for God. That God has got exceptional people and clever people and able people. There is no doubt whatsoever, and God uses them. But because we haven't got that, God can give us other things. You know, there's many a man that's full of brains and has no sense. And there's many a man has got natural ability that hasn't got scriptural gift. You know, natural ability and spiritual gift are 2 distinct things altogether. I want to tell you today that spiritual gift is an endowment of the risen head in the book of Ephesians. It all comes from him, and endued with the Holy Spirit, and with some measure of faith in these things, the man's gift develops. Gift is not one thing. It's not 2 things. It's 3 things. It's gift according to grace. It's gift according to ability. It's gift according to faith. Gift according to grace is what God gives you. Gift according to ability, don't get shocked now, it's what your father gives you. That's what you're born with. You're born with ability, and God uses that. But just in case you say, my father was clever, it's gift according to faith. It's the measure in which you appropriate it and go in for it and get these 3 things all ticking together. Grace, ability, faith. Then you've got what we call as gifted people. Any 2 of them will not do. You need the 3 of them. You need God's endowment. You need ability to communicate the mind of God to people. And you need the faith to appropriate all that God has in store for us all. Now here are 4 slaves. And each of them have a different setting. You know, Joseph is sold in Canaan. He's sold to the Midianites and possibly sold again to the Ishmaelites. Well, says someone, I've always wondered the difference about the Ishmaelites. The only thing I know about the Ishmaelites is they've always got these dangling earrings round about them. That's the difference we know between Israelites and Ishmaelites. There's something about Ishmaelites. Their origin, their background, they're not pure.
They've got a bad background.
Sold to these men. He's sold in Canaan. Here's another man, Moses. He's a slave, but he's not in Canaan. He's a slave in Egypt. When you come to Daniel, he's a slave in Babylon. When we come to Esther, she's a slave in Persia. But it doesn't matter where the slaves, and it doesn't matter where they are, God is going to raise them up, and God is going to use them. If someone, if I was in Richmond meeting, or I was in Maine, or I was in Fairview, I would be a different person, listen. If you can't shine where you are, you can forget it. If someone I'm thinking about a change, forget all about it. Live and be a man, and be a woman. Just where you are. God saw that that man was sold in Canaan. Saw that the other rose out of Egypt. Saw that the other rose out of Babylon. Difficult, and we'll deal with that. And then the other in Persia. Oh, what days these people really lived in. You know, we should be seeing coming up through our ranks a whole host of able, gifted, spiritual people, but we're not! You know, I expected through the education system, when everyone would get bright and intelligent and up and up, that the meetings would be blessed, might have nearly been cursed. When men had nothing and no brains and no thought of self, the meetings were blessed with power. I want to tell you today, wherever you are in the audience, I want to tell you that God can lift you up. And God can use you. To someone I'm getting on now. Remember in the book of the Acts, Paul stayed with an old disciple. It's the only, maybe the only old ones, the only ones you can trust. But I'm not here to denigrate you. But I'm saying this, that Paul lived with an old disciple. Let me come through these passages. I really want to come in upon them with some haste. You know, each one of these persons began to rise in life because of a singular thing that marked them all. Each one of them had a singular thing in their life. You know, with Joseph, it was purity that was the basis of his advancement. Purity was the basis of his advancement. You know, when you come to Moses, it's humility that was the basis of his advancement. Purity is the basis of Joseph's advancement. Humility is the basis of Moses' advancement. Not only so, when you come to Daniel, it's consistency. That's the basis of his advancement. When you come to Esther, it's absolute fidelity to her guardian, Mordecai, keeping the word and going forward and touching the top of the golden scepter. But it's fidelity to God and to his servant, Mordecai, at that time. What am I saying is, you know, is there someone in here and they're strong and purity of life? I don't mean that Pharisaical thing. That's just a hateful thing. But there is people who are strong in this. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the pure in heart. You know, the pure in heart couldn't watch all the filthy things that come over the media. The pure in heart couldn't read everything that's published, could they? The pure in heart. Oh, Joseph was the pure. I said, are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Oh, he's got that point. When it's Moses, well, we do read that after his further education, after his education in Egypt, there was none greater in word and deed than Moses. Oh, I don't want you to be thinking that Moses had only 2.5 brains. Or something like that. Oh, he had a massive mind. But he was so humble. And he's got a self-assessment of himself that when God first speaks to him, he says, I can't speak. It's not that he couldn't speak, but he didn't feel worthy of speaking. Get someone else. There's something lovely about that, isn't there? Now, isn't that? You know, the people that's got coming up amongst us today, my, they would nearly talk a gramophone to scrap iron. They can all talk, and they can talk, and they can talk. They're all trained to talk. Moses says, I can't do it. Oh, I would to God there was risen up amongst us men that really think they're not worth it, and they're not the men for it, and that laborers should be thrust out into the harvest field. They're all running too quick. They're all thinking there's a romance about it. There's none at all. Moses was most modest, most meek, the meekest man in all the earth. God loves that very, very much. I picked up in Daniel the consistency because I understand that he's nearly 90 when his last message goes out to the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. He's about 90 and has been forgotten. He's been left the way out. No one cares to ask him along now to the meetings. He's not a preacher now. He's about 90. And you know, it's the beautiful consistency from the moment he was 18 to the time that he was 90 that he's just the same man. I don't get upset when young men change. I'm terribly embarrassed when old men change. It embarrasses me to see old men that went on and did right in the sight of the Lord and at the end of the road to just give it up. For who? For whom? For what? Right to the end of his old days. Listen to Samuel as he stood before the people. He says, whose ox have I taken? Whose ass? Whose manservant? Whose maidservant? And walked all the days of his life before the Lord's people. Not a living man could point a finger at him that he was greedy, that he was covetous, that he was vain, that he was fashionable. We seem to give even preachers a fool's pardon, don't we? The most kindly, the most modest, the most disinterested people in this world should be the preachers. And that young girl, and I'll come to that at the end, that young girl with everything before her, just anointed queen, just found acceptance. Maybe she'll just compromise a little bit, but she put her life and her head and her all upon the line. Because if the golden scepter was not stretched out, she must surely be put to death. Therefore, let us commence. Is someone your half an hour gone already? Let us commence. Joseph, there are little things in that man's life that you all should know. And this should help the elders. This isn't just for the young people. This should help the elders. You know, there's three phases in that man's life. Three phases in Joseph's life. There's three phases in yours. There's a morning. There's a midday. And there's an evening. There's three calls in a sinner's life. All day long have I called unto a gainsaying and disobedient people. There's the morning of a sinner's youth. There's a midday of his maturity. And there's an evening of his experience. And if he doesn't get saved, he'll have a terrible night. But we have a morning. And we have a midday. And we have an evening. Let me see, Joseph. You know, when Joseph was a young man, he was tested in adversity. When he was just a little bit older, he was tempted to impurity. And when he came to 30 years of age, and only then, he was trusted with prosperity. Tested in adversity. Tempted to impurity. Trusted with prosperity. Have you run with the footman? Do you get offended at the brethren when they don't agree with you in the reading? Do you get a bit huffed? You're not worth anything yet. What if I had been offended at everything the brethren said to me in the readings? I would have been away to a little frizzle by this time. No, no. You know, Joseph was tried with his brethren. Do you know why? He was trying to tell them what the stars meant. What the moon meant. What the sun meant. What the wheat and the corn meant. He was trying to tell them heavenly things. And he was trying to tell them dispensational things that were to happen in the earth. He was trying to tell them spiritual things. He was trying to tell them divine purpose. He was trying to tell them of the future. He was trying to tell them the heart of God and the mind of God. And they found the brethren very difficult to talk to. Preachers find the audiences difficult. Especially as year in and year in goes out and there's no change. Very difficult. He was trying with those brethren. You know, his father, some people think that Jacob was just a doting old man and he should never have sort of patronized his son. That's not the idea at all. You know, Jacob would love to have given Reuben that coat. And he would love to have given Simeon that coat. And Levi that coat. And Judah that coat. But he couldn't do it. Every one of those sons
had disqualified themselves from wearing that coat.
God would love to impart spiritual things to you, brother. God would love to have you further on, sister. I hope you haven't morally disqualified yourself.
Reuben!
Thou camest unto thy father's bed.
Simeon!
Instruments of cruelty are in his habitation.
Levi!
He became part and parcel of Simeon's sin, though not altogether to blame.
Judah!
He went down to the sheep shearers and saw a harlot.
Every one of them, the coat should have been on their shoulders.
Are they forfeited the right?
I hope you haven't forfeited the right for things.
Oh, Joseph's pure.
Did you ever think of this? Joseph wears a coat of many colors.
This is the word of the Lord Christ. This is him sitting every night and saying, did I see sun and moon and stars? Did I see fields of wheat and corn? Did I see sheep standing up?
My mind was racing coming in the car today.
The word of the Lord Christ.
Mary standing at the cross, beneath the cross of Jesus. You remember what Gabriel said? All the titles of the son that would be born.
What a galaxy of titles in Luke chapter 1!
And she looks up at him now, suffering and bleeding and dying
and emaciated and marred!
The word of the Lord was trying her. You and I are called to serve. Sometimes we can enter into our lean times. And sometimes no one's saved. And sometimes no one gets changed with the ministry.
And the word of the Lord, it tries us.
It tries us with our families. It tries us in our employment.
It says about Elijah.
And the brook dried up.
Many a time have we sat at the brook drying up.
Many a time, many a man in our country has sat at the brook of sorrow, and the brook of unemployment, and the brook of no future, and the brook of sorrow with the children. Sometimes, my friend, our hearts have been broken.
The word of the Lord tried them.
How is this man going to be mighty and useful?
Because he's come through all these. He's not just a whiz kid down from London
or something like that. This man has come through it all.
This is so very, very important. I just want to say one more thing about him. There's so much to say about the others. You're possibly weary.
When he does come to the throne, eventually, I want you to admit with me this afternoon, he does grace it, doesn't he? He does grace it. There's something about him. There's weight. There's character. There's integrity. Something about the man.
You know, before he went in before Pharaoh, the first mention in the book of Genesis, it says he put on a linen garment. Like lovely wee coat of colours, isn't he?
I think he's still lovelier with the linen garment.
You know, if he fell foul of Potiphar's wife,
he couldn't have put on the linen garment.
You don't go through the stages. You don't want to be a man before you're a boy. You don't want to be a leader.
When all the time you're really needing to be led.
Don't assume to be a teacher when all the time your ignorance is looking out your face. I wouldn't assume to be a teacher if I couldn't contribute in the reading, and couldn't pray, and couldn't give a word to the Lord's people.
Don't assume to be leaders.
And please, don't expect people to lead after you, follow after you, if you've never been prepared to be led yourself.
That's one of the great things about Titus.
He was a born leader, but he always deferred to Paul.
Something lovely about that. It's humble, I know that. And it's not, it irks him and awkward.
But mind you, it's the way to true success.
Have we graced the throne? When we come to the book of Exodus, what a different set of circumstances have come about. And God is going to work all things according to the current of His will. In that opening chapter for the young people, we notice there that there's a godless monarch. There's a godless monarch. We read this, that he knew not Joseph. He knew not Joseph. He knew not the dealings of God. He knew not providential, sovereign dealings. A godless monarch. He gave a very grievous mandate. He gave a very grievous mandate. What was it? All the male children had to be put in the river. All the male children had to be put in the river. And equal to a godless king and a grievous mandate. The passage doesn't finish until we're introduced to the godly midwives.
The godly midwives.
What? Monarch? Midwives? What? Well, one
friend, of the fear of the Lord was in our souls the way it was in those women. There'll be a great change in our thinking.
I want to tell you this. Egypt doesn't want an end.
Actually, what they're after is the Messiah. What they're after really is the breaking up and the destroying of the line, the male line.
Oh, God, look, monarch.
I say this to you, my friend. We're humble, obedient citizens. We fear God. We honor the King. And I want to tell you this, that there are things that have been passed in legislation in our parliament that we as Christians have never voted. Ah, the godless people in the government.
There may be an occasional one who's a Christian man. I'm not denying that at all. Basically, my friend, it is the world system, and they are the earth dwellers.
Don't be carried away with them. The grievous mandate put all the male children in the river.
But you know, the midwife, they didn't fear the king. And you know, the Hebrew women, they were proved to be better women than any of the rest of the Egyptian women. Go and read it for yourself. The Hebrew women!
They lived to preserve their children. You mothers in the meeting, we might never meet again. You know, in the word called home, there's H-O-M-E. And they always take the end to mean mother. I hope your children have not lacked in children. You know, when I used to come home, the first thing I sugar in the door, are you there, mother? My father told me, that when he used to come home at my age, he used to start saying, are you home, mother? And you know, in our house, when the old farm doors open, I can hear the girl shouting, where are you, mother? In your hands is a life and soul and future of the children. By the way, if you fathers are sitting there smug and thinking you've come clear, the word of God says to Israel,
tell the fathers to teach the children. The mothers have not to teach them. The fathers have to teach their children.
There's someone working up a load of things. I know you might need it. There's someone, I've got a big business. I'll tell you one thing you'll have. If you don't listen to me, you'll have a big broken heart. You'll have a miserable life. I'll tell you this, I don't care what you've got in the Bank of Montreal or what trust you've got or what shares you've got.
We'll prove this! That if the children are not right, nothing in this earth is worth living for!
Take the little child to the hospital, just sit over his
bed and weep your tears out. What in the house? What in the garage? What in the bank? I tell you this.
You would part with it all to give them life. We're needing to get back, my friend. And we're needing elders that will teach what I'm teaching you. I shouldn't need to come and teach you this. The secret of Moses with his mother. And the sister begin to take on the same features as the mother.
And the Bible says, as the mother is, so is the daughter.
Children, girls, are just their mother in another skin.
Boys!
Just their mother in another skin. One of the saddest discoveries in life is to see your own indiscretions and insufficiency and weakness. And to see it coming out in your own family is the most humbling thing a man can face.
But Moses had a mother.
My, when she could hide him no longer, she cradled him in the bulrushes. And she dubbed it with pitch and with slime. And she put it onto the edge of the mighty river. She didn't shove it away out into the middle and say, they'll paddle back somehow or another. Just the edge. Just the edge. Don't you give the word, the children, the taste for the world. And the media, and the films, and all these things, I tell you this.
And that I remember are the evil things of this world and not the good.
Just put them on the edge. You can't help them going to school. You can't help it. Maybe you can in different countries, but you can't help it. We can't help taking our children to school. We are bound by law. And don't put them into the middle of it. Just put them at the edge of it. And don't keep your eye too long away from them. And have somebody watching them. Like Miriam. Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? You notice how this man got a start. I was going to be a long time in that palace. But you know, the effect of his mother and his mother's ways were most touching. Indeed. Maybe I should point this out to you. This family produced three great people. This one family produced a prophet in Moses, produced a high priest in the first one in Aaron, and produced a prophet S and Miriam. One family! Family!
Old Amram and Jehochabed with funny sounding names. You wouldn't give your children that name now, would you? It must be something from New York or Chicago or something like that. Give them some film star's name.
From old Amram and Jehochabed.
Moses and Aaron and Miriam.
And I know that Aaron was a bit of a girl. I know that. But you're that. And I'm that. I only wish that I could end my days like Aaron. It says that he died on the top of a mountain. I wish to God that I could die spiritual, prayerful, interested, forceful for God. I know Miriam failed. But she's not the first and she'll not be the last woman. She was green-eyed at her brother's success and jealous of her.
You see, that's the things that makes us all shriveled up and why we can't get on. It's because these things are in our hearts.
But Moses, oh, what progress he made. I noted too that he started off as a peasant. And I notice he graduated to being a worldly prince. I notice too in his songs and in his writings, he becomes a poet.
I notice too that he's a mighty soldier. I notice too he's a defender of the weak.
I would love to go through all these points with you, but just let us come to that point, the defender of the weak. Strengthen the weak. Comfort the feeble-minded. Oh, what a minister that would be. How did he defend the weak? You remember when he went out and two men were fighting. One was an Egyptian and the other was a Hebrew. And he knew that the Egyptian was to blame. You know, when Moses struck, he didn't need to strike twice. And they buried him in the sand. He said he looked round about. Some would say he didn't look up. He thought that God didn't see him. And you know, he really thought that no one else saw him. But you know, someone does see us.
The next day he went out and it's two Hebrews that are fighting.
The shame of the testimony. Two Hebrews fighting.
Two people wanting emancipation. Two people with a promise to the promised land. And they're fighting. What? They're fighting.
And when he went to try and separate his brethren, thank God he didn't slay his brethren. Some of the brethren haven't learned that yet. They're always slaying their brethren. tried to get the thing right, and one said, will you slay me the way you did the Egyptian?
No, many a time your brethren don't understand why you do things.
There was another time when he fled from Egypt, and he came to the well. And it says that the shepherds were cruel men, and they would abuse the daughters of the man of Midian.
Moses stood up and defended them.
You see, there was a gentleman in Moses. There was that character about him. Whether it's a worldling and a believer, whether it's two believers, or whether it's other men and browbeating poorer, weaker people. You see, there's character in Moses. He's always standing up for the weak. To someone, could you give us a further proof?
Certainly.
You know, his sister sinned. His sister sinned. She became all lepers. And he cried to God, oh God, save her now, cleanse her now. God save her, her father had spit in her face. She had been outside the camp 7 days.
But he wanted his sister. Oh, he loved the Hebrews.
He tries to keep them from fighting. He'll defend the weak. And he would even cry to God that his sister, that really slandered him and put an innuendo upon him. And yet he's crying to God that she might be cleansed. There's something beautiful about these people, isn't there? These are the people that come to the front. These are the people that have subjugated the flesh. These are the people that think not about their own things.
But they think of the things which are of Jesus Christ.
You know, Moses proved that he was superior to Egypt. I want to. I'm just watching this thing now. He proved he was superior to Egypt. You know, Egypt had a popularity for him. And it says the pleasures of Egypt, they're mentioned as well. And you know, the treasures of Egypt, they're mentioned as well.
Very few of us through the popularity test, do we? Oh, we love people to think a lot of us. What did you think about our meeting?
Many people have it through the pleasure test.
You must go skiing on Saturday morning. You must.
I must have my hobby. I must have my habit. I must. I must. I must. No, you mustn't!
Moses forsook
the popularity of Egypt. He forsook the pleasure of Egypt. And he forsook the treasure that was in Egypt. Oh, says someone, I don't go here and I wouldn't do that and I don't have ping pong and you know what I mean? Are you an old money bag? Are you a money lover? Are you? You're worse than the rest. What am I getting at? I'm saying this to you. I'm saying the devil hasn't just got one snare in his book.
The devil has hosts of snares. He's been practicing it for
6,000 years. He knows every corner. He knows every heart. He knows how to work deep human beings. He knows how to lay the snares.
And it's not being popular. You can't stand to being Christian and being straight. We like to treasure. We like to feel secure with our treasure.
What is the pleasure of it all?
That's what makes great men. When these things are behind them.
Somehow you want to be spiritual.
You can't ride two horses at one time.
You'll either be spiritual or you'll be carnal. You'll be spiritual.
But you know, everyone can tell who's spiritual in me.
I can tell everyone who's spiritual in our meeting.
The light in their eyes. And when you preach to them, they're like little birds sitting in the nest. You know, the ones that haven't flown out yet. Their mouths are just open like that, taking in all the worms and all the bits.
They'll love it. They'll love it.
Whether they can get it, or whether they can read it in the passage. But anyone that wants to give it, they'll love it. They'll love it. Everyone that's spiritual loves it. Everyone that's spiritual loves the meeting, and loves the order, and loves the word, and loves it. They love it. I'm hardly halfway down. Let us just see another little point. Moses proved to be above human terror.
He forsook Egypt,
not fearing the wrath of the king. That's so very important. And Moses proves himself above personal slander. His brother and his sister slandered him, and he never said a word about it. He's risen above personal slander.
Aye, that's some height. You're getting up the rungs now. You've left the popularity, you've left the pleasure, you've left the treasure. You're not afraid of men, my, you're coming on, but there's a few rounds yet. you come. Ah, somebody's talking about me. They're saying I'm too close. They're saying I'm too hard. They're saying I'm too forward. They're saying I'm too pushing.
Maybe it is, and if it's true,
I've got for forgiveness.
But what he said was that the Lord only speaks through this. And Moses wasn't mentioned. Moses is in a palace. You know, when you're out of touch with your brother, you always use his surname, and you never use his Christian name.
You know, when you're friendly and chummy and palsy with everybody, you always use the first name, and in our country they begin to use your sort of by name. Do you know what I mean by that?
Well, once you're out of favor, you know, it's that McPeak that said that. He's always getting at that. Do you know what I mean?
Does God just speak through this? He's had a good idea. And if that's the way you think about the Lord's servant, I tell you, you're not making progress at all.
Okay.
Let us come down a little bit, or we've got another rung before we finish.
You know, Egypt taught him to rule.
Ah, Egypt taught him to rule. And the wilderness taught him to lead.
You know, Egypt taught him to be the soldier.
Egypt taught him to be the programmer. Egypt taught him to be the leader.
In that sense of military acumen and prowess.
But when he was in the desert, he believed his feet.
I cannot remember who said it, but someone said it to me this. If I just knew who you were that said it, I would give you the credit for it. But someone in Vancouver pointed out to me that in the 40 years that he went about the wilderness, he must have buried a lot of sheep. He must have tended to a lot of lame legs. You know that sheep, the thing that affects them is their teeth. And their feet. Once you look into that, you'll think that funny. That's what affects your walk. What you eat. Affects what you are. Many a set of feet you suffered. Many feet you suffered. And you know, when you're short on a sheep's feet, you turn it over in its back, and you straddle it, and you get your knife out, and you begin to tear away the rot, you know? The only thing you can remember is not to keep the sheep in your back all the time, or they don't grow in their back.
You've got to pare the feet. You've got to take away the rot. But you can't get a sheep to grow on its back. It'll die. Don't always be getting on to the people. Don't always be fighting with them.
Get them on their feet. Get them on grass. Short grass. Green grass. Lots of changes of grass. That's what sheep need, you know. They thrive well on a well-fed diet and changed land. But I'm not here to talk about sheep. But the point is, let us come then, and I must close, though I have been told to preach to 5 o'clock. I think this is one of the major points in this great movie. It's this, that he got beyond his own genius. He got beyond his own genius. Now everyone thinks they're brainless, whether they are or not. Everyone actually thinks within themselves that they're a bit of a god themselves. And that really there's nobody quite like us. And there's no one can do it just quite like us. Everyone's like that. Oh, you might be sitting smug and you think my eyes are not on you. But I'm telling you, everyone thinks they're quite a genius in their own little way.
But he was a genius. But when he was getting spoken to by God concerning that tabernacle, God said to him, listen, I don't want a blue thread where a purple should be. I don't want white linen where the scarlet should be. I don't want silver where brass should be.
I don't want anyone to think that that's brass. I want it to be pure gold.
I want you to see that you make it according to the pattern that was shown you in the mount. 8 times in one chapter he says that. I don't want your genius in this matter. And I'll preach this from the first day I come to the last that I go. Listen. The local assembly hasn't been waiting for your bright ideas. The local assembly is a concept of God. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 1, to the church of God.
To the church of God. Forget the ecclesia. You've said and heard and read enough about that ecclesia. Think about this one.
It's of God. That's why the morals should be above street level. That's why there should be no divisions. That's why there should be no lawsuits. That's why there should be perfect marriages in the Church of God. Chapter 7. That's why there should be no idolatry. That's why there should be no difficulty in the sustaining of the service of God. Chapter 10. It's the Lord's table. My feeding upon Christ. Chapter 11. It's the Lord's supper. The local assembly is not waiting for you to turn up and join it for something to happen in it. It was all conceived in the mind of God, and it was a divine revelation. And I say that it is not permissible for you to interfere with God's legislation. It's someone that will make the meeting brighter. I'm sorry. It's someone that will attract the young. I'm sorry. To someone that will get room for our gift. I want to tell you, my friend, the greatest wisdom that you can show is just to bow to the revealed mind of God. Whether it's in doctrine, whether it's in devotion, whether it's in practice, whether it's of Christ, whether it's of the dispensational settings of things, whether it's practice, it doesn't matter. The secret of your life, and you'll find it within a few years if you do it, just to bow to the Word of God and get into the current of his mind and will for this present day and age. I would love to have spoken of the others, but I'm afraid of wearing your heart out. What can we say then about Daniel? Well, Daniel, of course, it's a sad story. I guess that Daniel was taken from his home. I take it that he changed his nature and possibly made him a eunuch in the king of Babylon's court. I know they changed his education, and I know they changed his food, and I know they changed his name. But there's one thing they never changed. They never changed his love for God. And they never changed his convictions about the things of God. And just a few points on this. There are so many, so much to say upon it. I want to just make a few more points. Your lads and girls are all coming up. And it's lovely to see the young people. I do appreciate that very much. You know, the thing that stuck to Daniel was his early piety. His early piety. By the time he was 18, he was able to judge between good and evil. By the time he was unclean, by the time he was 18, he was able to judge between what was real and what was true. By the time he was 18, He was able to get the courage to say no to the mighty Nebuchadnezzar. What age are you? Are the brethren always making excuses for you? I remember one day in a court, standing with young men of 18 years of age, standing before Lord Elphiston in the court in Edinburgh, just slips of boys. Standing there. And I can hear one young boy say when Lord Elphiston says to him, "My young man, would you not fight for your country?" I can see the blushing face. I can see the maturity. He says, "Your Lordship, I find it difficult to have a Bible in one hand and a gun in the other." And I bowed my head that day. I gave God thanks that the cream of our land was not there. Six months in prison, my young man. What am I saying to you? I'm saying to you that you are never going to do anything until you get yourself straightened out, that God is first. And let the rest come and go as it will. God, his truth, his word, his ways, his will and wisdom. Somebody could have taken that and never troubled himself. Why I go out here and I do this and I do that and I go my whole.
If he had taken that wine and eaten that stuff from the king's table,
he was saying there was another God for by Jehovah. But it was offered to idols. He knew the first commandment if he didn't know nothing else.
Thou shalt have no other God before me.
Have we got young men today? Are you easy bowled over? Are you easy carried away? Let's put a little test to you. You know, in some countries, you may not know this, but some countries, the young men and meetings have nights when no one interferes and no one comes to visit them and no one rings the phone. And that's the night when they all read. Isn't that good? Isn't that good? You see, we don't have preachers come to our meeting and we need all to read. And all the brethren need to read for they have to stand up at the ministry meeting like this every Sunday and preach the gospel in their own meeting. So they've all got to read. And that night that you set aside to seek to God in prayer, you read the word of God, are you easy? Are you easy won over to come here and come there? Yeah, I say this to you, my friend, there's too many things. Too many side things. Too many attractions. And too many things with Bible names. Aye, it's hard to get down to the real thing. Down to the Bible and down to the praying and down to the noting down. And down to getting a wee bit for the folk that matter. Daniel, oh, early piety about this man. But you know, he not only early piety, and he not only had that, but he had gentle courtesy about him. Gentle courtesy. You know, he said to his friend, the eunuch, he said, now wait, I'll tell you this. Don't give us this, but try us in this, and try us for 10 days. And you know, he's so pleasant about it, and he was so lovely about it. I'm not telling you about suaveness and all that. I'm talking about a man with gentle courtesy, easy to be interested. Now this man had an alternative to the problem. You'll have heard me saying this, and I'll say it again because most of the audience are dull here.
I never make an objection in the meeting to anything unless I have a spiritual alternative.
You see, if I'm just objecting all the time, I'll develop the features of an oddity and a crank.
But when I can say to the brethren, I think that this that you're doing is a wrong thing. I would like to know scripture for it. I would like to be helped. I'm not going to fight and we're not going to help. I would like to suggest that this is a spiritual alternative.
Feed us on the pulse, he said. Man, the other thing would have been a better feat, I can tell you that. It would be all decorated up. Feed us on the pulse.
When the 10 days were over, they were fairer, and they were harder.
All the children of the flock.
You know, my friend, I tell you this, as a food for the pilgrim people of God to feed us, there is a food that makes a man fairer, and makes him harder,
makes him fair to God, and makes him to be strong in the things of God. Oh, what a glorious man this was. You know, he was tremendously. He came to be second in the land as well. And how did he carry it?
Oh, that would be another session.
How he carried his prosperity. You know, he still goes down and sees his old friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, once he's got big, he hasn't forgot his friends. Have you seen young people, once they get on a little bit, they never get near your door? You're not big enough for them.
What a pity. They've all got small. We're still praying with these three friends.
No, you're a wise man. Even Ezekiel said, listen to this. Ezekiel said, art thou wiser than Daniel? Man, he was full of wisdom. And dear Ezekiel, what wisdom he had, what spirit.
And he's giving compliments to Daniel. Art thou wiser than Daniel?
You know, you should be able to give compliments to people, appreciate people. Appreciate people's ministry. Appreciate spiritual things. Are they wiser than Daniel?
You know, he had three messages to give. I know there's four or five, but he has about three messages to give.
He gives a message to Nebuchadnezzar.
He says, thou, O king, have that head of gold.
But when Nebuchadnezzar starts to make the image on the plain of Shinar, he makes it all of gold. Can you see the thing?
Give them a foot. And I'll take a mile.
He thought it was all gold, but the revelation was so clear.
Head of gold. All of gold.
Isn't nature dreadful? It's always wanted to change what God says.
He gave this man another message. One was for his exaltation. Thou, O king, art that head of gold, thou art the king of kings.
to him another day.
If you don't care for the poor, and you don't make the life of the captives a little bit easier, you'll be put out to the grass for 7 years.
His hair grew long, and his nails were like talons, and he was switched off by God. But he learned that God ruleth in the kingdoms of men. Don't think you're too big. Don't think this big Babylon that you're building and this big firm that you're building. I tell you this, our God can lay the axe to the root of the tree. He's an old man now. And someone would say, oh, don't be as decisive when you get old, be a bit more mellowed. I checked up in one of the dictionaries, the word mellow means fruit going bad. Fruit going bad. There's a lot of fruit going bad. Oh, I wish you could get this at 90 years of age. Standing before a godless man that could put him to death. And he says to Belshazzar, though thou knewest all this, thy kingdom shall be divided
and given to another.
When he's 18, he's got a message. As he advances, he's got a message for the king. As he advances, he's got another message for the king. And all through the reign of the four seasons of the kings, Daniel's still there when all the rest are all away. Are you going to be still here when all the rest have all passed on? Esther, I know the women have been waiting for me to speak on Esther. You know, Esther is right on the point of destiny. Right there. There was lots of things that were against her. I noticed that she'd been sadly bereaved. Her father and mother had died. That doesn't mean sadly. You know, I don't know the audience, I don't know all your circumstances, but the thing to them that have lost her. Not easy for boys and girls to come up without their people. And you know, she was not only sadly bereaved, but she was lovingly adopted. To someone I don't believe in it. Well, maybe you don't, but don't spout about the place. Don't talk and hurt people. If you know that none of you are going to heaven without being adopted. I just think about it. The only thing that the difference is that with natural adoption, you can give your child everything but your maker. But with divine adoption, you get the nature of God as well.
And the beauty of it, and the riches of it is glorious. She was lovingly adopted.
And just notice too, that I don't read of Mordecai's wife. And I don't read that he had all the facilities to adopt anybody. But he got down to the matter! And because of his self-sacrifice, something was brought for God, even the salvation of his people. It's all very, very touching. You know, not only was she sadly bereaved, not only was she lovingly adopted, but I noticed she was graciously gifted. You know, she was fairer than all the maidens that came in before the Ahasuerus. She was graciously gifted. I would love to really speak about that. You know, real womanhood has nothing to do with face, and it's nothing to do with figure.
Nothing at all. And it has nothing to do with fashion either.
Peter makes it so clear in how any woman can miss it, I'll never know.
Modesty, honesty, humility. Something about it.
Something about it that only those who don't want to see it miss.
Meek and a quiet spirit, but in the sight of God, beyond price.
You know, the virtuous woman in 31 of Proverbs, it says, a virtuous woman, who can find her? Her price is above rubies. That means you couldn't get a ticket on her.
You can't get a price on her. She's beyond
rubies. Her husband safely trusts in her. And she doesn't speak but once in that book.
She speaks with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness.
Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own wax praise her.
In the gate.
Oh my friend, this is the Bible. This isn't just a ministry meeting. These are the real things you must try. So, she was graciously gifted as well.
She wasn't long living for she learned that God had foes, and better it foes, Haman, the Agagite. Oh, she learned that God's people had enemies as well. Then, last of all, I noticed the great moment of destiny came in her life. And she had either to face life or death. She had to go in before Ahasuerus, and if he didn't stretch out the golden scepter, then die she must. She was going to put her life in the line for the Lord's people. I loved this, and I didn't notice it till I was coming home with our brother Jim McConnell today. I didn't notice this till today. They say that she touched the top of the staff. Now, she didn't get a hold of it. No presumption with her. No arrogance with her. She got the blessing and she got relief. And she got the people of God from that desperate edict that had been passed by Haman the Agagite. You know, before it's finished, she and Mordecai are sending letters to the Lord's people. They're sending peace to all the seed. Each one of these people, I say to you, each one of them were slaves. Each one of them were peasants. Each one of them at the beginning were penniless. Each one of them had no background. Each one of them, God in mercy and in sovereignty, he brought them to rule the destiny of the then known world.
Then I have to just say a word or two before the meeting starts today, and we go to our respective homes. Our brother McSweet and his wife, Greta, have been with us now for 3 weeks. They came on the 2nd of April to Canada. Our brother McFeed had been here 6 years previously, and this is the first visit for his wife at this time. So we gave them a hearty welcome at that time, and we were glad to have our brother and other brethren, Brother Patterson, too, from Scotland at the conference, and it was grand to have their fellowship. And then the ministry meetings will be going on from night to night, and we've been following around with them, and it's been grand to hear the word ministered in such solemnity and power and in such forthrightness, and I'm sure we're all going to benefit by it, both young and old. And we need to take heed and to obey the word of our brethren, our elder brethren, in that way. The first time I met Mr. McFeet was down in a place called Beath in Scotland, way back in 1977. And someone took us up to the tent meeting there that he was having, and after the meeting I stood out on the fringe of the crowd, and while I was standing there, an older man came walking over to me, and he said, "Mr. Boyd," he said, "I hope," he says, "I hope you haven't come over here to Scotland to take Mr. McFeet away to America." And I looked at him, and I can't recall what I said at the time, but anyway, this is what he said to me. He must have thought I was a spy from Canada and looking for preachers, eligible preachers for Canada and for the conferences. Anyway, we met at that time, and I guess we had correspondence after that and so on. And now this being a second visit, it's been very, very great. I was thinking of what Paul said to the people there in Ephesus. Remember when he was with them on the seashore, he said, "For I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of God." And so this has been true of our brother while he has been here with us at this time. For the first few days, he and his wife suffered jet lag, and that's quite normal for people coming away from the United Kingdom. But he's going back home now, and they're going to be suffering jet drag. It will be a little different the other way when they get over there, so it'll be the jet drag for a few days, but he's going to be busy again at conferences and meetings and so on. So in the meantime, let us pray for our brother in his work and in his labors, that the Lord will preserve him and help him and continue to be with him in all his services for God. We need men like this in our assemblies and in the work of the Lord to enable us to continue on for God. We would like to say here that a number of the assemblies have asked for our brother to visit them and to have a little ministry or gospel with them, but it's not been possible to work it all in. So we're sorry that we're not able to accommodate all the assemblies that ask for his presence and for his ministry. But we're hoping that he'll come back again. Somebody said to me, why don't you ask him to come back to the conference next year? Well, I've hinted at it, and maybe before he goes, it'll work out that we'll get some definite answers. In the meantime, we will say that he and his wife will be leaving Vancouver on Tuesday about 6 o'clock from the airport there, going on British Airways back to the old country at this time. So we've appreciated his ministry very, very much, and we just ask that the Lord will bless him and continue to give him health and strength. Seems to be just in the prime of his life right now, just in the very prime of his life.